If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for Closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the living love and the living light in which we live and move and have our being. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is, we forever live, move, exist within a greater life. So take a deep breath and consciously evoke that greater life into you. Let it inhabit you fully. Take a deep breath and fire every cell of your being with that life. Ground yourself in eternal life. Deep breath. Call it into every nerve fiber in your being. And if there's any areas that feel like dead zones, anywhere in your body, in your mind, anywhere, let's take a deep breath and blow that life into those areas. And that's how you release pain so easily. Pain is wherever there's been a block to the eternal love that you are. Pain is wherever we have contracted. Pain is wherever we have, in our service to humanity and perhaps countless galaxies, where we have worked with areas and taken on some of that burden in our bodies, which contain all of the 14 worlds. There are 7 heavenly worlds in the torso. There are 7 lower realms in the body, in the lower part of the body. You are a many in one universe and universes within the body. You are a microcosm within the greater macrocosm. All that exists is within you now. Everything. It's a matter of simply moving the awareness into those areas. So we cannot accomplish what we've always been. We cannot accomplish what has always existed. Think about it. We keep trying to accomplish what has always existed. And nor can we attain what always is. Think about it. We keep trying to attain what is already, could not cease to be. So all our self-efforting, all our doingness can amount to simply delaying our remembering ourselves back into what is. And what is a greater life in which we live and move and have our being. We exist within God. God exists within and as you, me, and all that exists. There is only that. that one divine existence. So we're being trained to identify with our divinity, with our immortality, rather than our mortal human personality. That is not who we are. So let's try this as an affirmation. Say your own name. I am God expressing as, in this case, Ashtar Athena. I am God playing the role of, and say what you do. I'm an activator and a decoder of the star seed. And now affirm, I am that one divine life. I am that one divine life. I am that one divine life experiencing as myself. As, you can put your name. I am experiencing myself through the many to realize and share and extend love. I am eternal love. So all extends from me, all returns to me. Mind, soul, bodies are my temples to which I manifest my supreme being and becoming. These are thoughts that arise that you share with truth. You see, only the thoughts you think with God are real. All other thoughts are false, and in truth have never had an effect on the holy mind you share with God. So they simply need to be quietly laid aside and allowed to dissolve back into the nothingness, for they've had no effect on the holy mind you share with God. And only the thoughts you think with God are eternal and real. Jesus made a wonderful statement in the Bible that practically no one understands. I have come that ye might have life, and that more abundant. No, it doesn't have anything to do with money. Sorry. That's a human invention, quite unnecessary. What Jesus was saying was that he had come to quicken the codes of living light, resurrection, transfiguration, and immortality that are embedded within that electromagnetic ionic field of gravitationally limited and entrapped life that you call your body. We have come to allow the quickening into immortal life that the Christ has demonstrated in his own quickening, his own resurrection, his own transfiguration, his own ascension, and to quicken that within us, within every cell of our being, that we can put off the corruptibility of the flesh and be transfigured into immortal life, which is the truth. It is the truth of that which we are. In doing that, we are to participate fully, fully in life. To be full participants in what is upon our horizon, upon our plate, within our face, in our presence. To participate. Because it's only in full participation that you're going to overcome fear. You've got to get into your life full bore. Because it's only in the activity that you can eat, as it were, or consummate, as it were, the unfulfilled momentums that have brought you into physical incarnation again. You are here again because there were things that you felt, wanted, wished, desired to do, say, experience, fulfill, create, whatever. But you are here because of momentums that you have seeded and perpetrated in the past. So your life at present is only a recapitulation of past. It is only bringing forward that which is of the past. Therefore you see nothing as it truly is today and know nothing of what it is to fully be alive. Because you're regurgitating the past, seeing only the past. Working through the ambitions and unfulfilled desires of the past. So in that, you're doing nothing. In doing that, you are asleep. You are redoing habitual patterns. But the only way to eat that and consummate that is to get into those areas and either transcend them through realization that they will give you nothing, that they will add nothing to you, that they are completely without value. Or you just get really busy and do what you have that impetus, that push, that karmic have to do. You just get in there and do it. That's called eating your karma. Eating the fruits of your unfulfilled desires, participating fully. And in that way, you outgrow, you transcend, you get tired of, you become surfeited with these stupid things that lead us nowhere and give us nothing. There is nothing, nothing, nothing to be gained here in the human state. It is only transcending that into the superhuman and the superhuman into the divine. That you will find what you're seeking, that you at last will find the love and the security and everything you seek in that state. So we are using each of our senses to probe into ever more subtle states of conscious perception. We spoke last week about the five bodies and the five senses, and how they have a quantum potential of becoming ever more subtle states of creative potentialities that we can choose into and activate by a great, great, overwhelming desire that arises within us to be. The will to be activates the bed of subtle potentialities that the will to be activates. So that will to be becomes the higher level of the will to self-expression on a human level. There is an upgrade there. You go from the desire to express your human potential, which is actually an imitation, because the human doesn't create anything, it just imitates. True creativity arises from the will to be, which manifests as that supreme being and becoming, which manifests as the fullness of your divine being, extending throughout myriads of worlds and creations yet to be, to come alive with the bliss of your being. For it is the bliss itself that creates beyond the human form. So there's a subtle refinement that takes place as we learn to access ever more transcendental states of awareness. However, there is a misleading teaching that emphasizes the not-self, anatman, or self-negation. And this is a great trap. And unfortunately, many spiritual aspirants today, particularly in the East, are practicing this, and it is a trap. It is the negation of that life more abundant, of that ever-extending creative intelligence that we call that greater life in which we live and move and have our being. And in this particular teaching, there is a misunderstanding of the purpose of the senses and their perception, to where they begin to negate all perception that comes through the senses. And they teach that all that can be seen, heard, all forms, everything that can be experienced is not real. And even consciousness itself must be completely negated. Now that's awfully close to the teachings that I often give of Advaita or Dzogchen. So you have to be very careful not to misunderstand what we're saying here. It's very subtle. And it has to do with not withdrawing from life, not from trying to negate your experiences and the richness of interaction, whatever it is, on whatever level. It is something that you would find yourself within. Not negate yourself. Not separate yourself. So many of you have the idea that you don't like it here. You don't want to be here. That even makes me cough. Because I'm speaking to you. And I've been there myself. We don't like it here. We don't want to be here. We want to go, quote, home. We want to go back to the star fleets. We want to be on a spaceship. We want to be with our twin flame someplace anywhere but here. And so we just wait for the rapture. We wait for the spaceship to beam us up. We wait for the shift into the fifth world. We're waiting for Prince Charming to come on his white stallion, or the Christ on his white horse, or the Kalki avatar, or. It's the Cinderella complex. One day someone, something will save me, deliver me, take me out of this hellhole. And we've never, ever, ever really been here. We've never shown up. We've never really experienced real life. And so it's not in withdrawing from life. It's from entering fully into life. Sink or swim. That's how you remember yourself back into your immortal, infallible, eternal, perfect, ever whole and fulfilled self. So in this false teaching, it emphasizes dissolution of basically everything that you would associate with life, with experience, with expression, with conscious co-participation, and a withdrawal from all outer emanations and expressions to enter an absolute state of non-existence or nothingness, no thingness. And I think actually you could call this the ultimate state of selfishness, falsely taken to be spiritual liberation. And it's a huge trap. We are to develop the bliss body while participating in life. That's the whole idea. It's to move into the Ananda Kosha, the bliss sheath, and be in life. Be in the world, but not subjected to the attachments and the illusions of the world. So this is a very deep teaching. There are three nerve channels or currents of divine life that we must use concomitantly and not isolate on one. The great immortal masters tell the story of a man long ago who did exactly what we're telling you. He focused on only one nerve channel that was the moksha nada, or the liberation nerve. And he wanted to create what's called the jalous, or the rainbow diamond body. But instead, he went into complete withdrawal of all the five currents within his body, consciousness, mind, and went into a complete state of nothingness, nothingness, complete self-negation. There was no awareness of bliss. In other words, he went to the very edge of what we call Mahasuna, the great void, which is the protection zone just before you get into the divine realms of soul and God realization. He went into the void. Do not meditate with the void as your goal. It's a false teaching. It's a trap. Self-affirmation is what we want, not negation. We must contribute to life, not withdraw. We are here to be active cosmic participants and co-creative spirits with Source, not nothingness, not void, not self-negation, not negation of the senses. It's not formless nothingness, that void that you, many of you meditate into or aspire to meditate into, is only the etheric void, Mahasuna. And if you get stuck in that state, you, at some point, have to be restored to life. And because you have contributed nothing, you have not made any contribution to life, you have simply withdrawn from life, it all adds up to nothing. You have accomplished nothing. Absolute zero. And then the masters have to come and rescue you, which they do, and then you have to be returned to life and you're back in the world again. So these three currents are in the center of the head. They extend out from the head, connecting you to the all that is, or to what I often speak of as Satchitananda. So the first nerve channel is called the Deva Nada, the God nerve. This gives you the impetus, the inspiration, the initiation energy that inspires and infuses and enlivens. It is divine life and liveliness. And then the second nerve channel or current of divine life that is in the head, extends from the head, connecting you to the all that is the patina nada. And that is the sustaining, that which upholds and sustains the life of awareness of the all that is. And then you have the moksha nada, which liberates, but it doesn't negate. So it releases the will to be and to extend infinite awareness. So you have the devanada, which is that which divine life itself initiates, the extension, the inspiration, the filling of the spirit, the creative initiatory energy, the push to be, not so much the push, the divine sankalpa, the divine will to be, to create. Then you have the patina nada, which is the sustaining awareness. And you have the moksha nada, the liberating nada, which doesn't release you from cosmic co-creatorship. It liberates you from attachment to that which you create. Because believe it or not, even great Logoi, who infuse suns and different orbs in the cosmos, they even become attached to their creation. So you see in these three nadis what is called in Hinduism, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Satchidananda. Satyam Shivam Sundaram. But now we're talking in terms of what you aim for when you meditate. Meditation really is purifying. It's giving yourself a commitment into the purifying, self-emptying process. So that everything that you have self-defined can be released and redefined by the divine spirit indwelling. So that you can be remembered back into the image and likeness of the divine perfection that you forever are and remain still, but have allowed self-definition and self-concepts and self-overlaying to cloud and obscure. There are three states of samadhi. Many of you have gone into these states and have not realized that you were in these states because they're so non-phenomenal in one sense that if you're a deep, long-time meditator, you've probably been in and out of them many times and haven't realized, oh, that's what that was. The first state is savikalpa. Savi means with. Kalpa means agitation or movement of consciousness. So savikalpa means there is a movement still of consciousness. Some slight sense of duality and otherness prevails. Some movement of the mind, which is often called agitations, but that's a little too strong. Because in savikalpa, you really are merged with God, but you also have a sense that there's a you and a God that you're merged with, or some ideation of that self in that. And we go in and out of that. It's not a steady state. Now, nirvikalpa, nir means absence of agitations or movement in the consciousness. And when you go in that state, you are completely beyond time, space, and any kind of sense of self-definition or self-awareness. You are literally merged in God. And in that state, you're unable to function in the world because it's beyond mind altogether. There is no sense of time, no in, no out, no up nor down. There is simply the absorption, complete absorption in the divine. The body will fall off like a dried leaf if one stays in that state beyond about 21 days. So, generally, one moves in and out of that state. But in that state, you really are not able to function well in the world. And there's a deeper state of samadhi called sahaja samadhi. Now, that's natural, grounded, divine awareness. But you can't get there by yourself. It's divinely gifted through grace. It's a gift of grace. Sahaja means natural. Samadhi means that state of equanimity, where everything is seen as the one, as the divine. So is that clear? We have to be participants in our life. Whether we're expressing the ego personality, or we're just living a human life where we have a lot of desires and a big, long bucket list we're checking off, or whether you are really actively going into these deeper states of consciousness, but you're not really sure what to aim for. Beloveds, we are to aim for complete emptiness of self-defining movements. In other words, you finally get to a point where you really let go and let God. It's in emptying of the self. It's in dying to the limited that we're born to, unlimited life. We keep offering and letting go, offering and letting go, offering and letting go. We accept everything that comes as divine grace. Everything that comes as divine grace. Everything that comes is awakening you to the allness that you are. That is, everything that comes to you is answering your prayer. There is not one single thing that will ever enter your life that isn't for your highest good. No matter how it looks. Because, yes, this, what we call the life that we see when we open our eyes, is a big dream. It's a cosmic dream and a cosmic play. What a dramatist we are as that greater self. And because it's a play of consciousness, we are meant to be good sports and play the game of life and enjoy it. Sai Baba says, no castor oil faces. Smile. Let nothing come in the way of your smile. Your loving, your compassion, your empathy, your caring. These are the Maitri. Maitri, from the word Maitreya. It means compassion, kindliness, friendliness. Are you compassionate? Are you kind? Are you friendly? Do you delight in making others happy more than you delight in yourself? That's the Maitreya energy. See, the ego is only interested in what it can get. It only uses relationships for self-gratification. It is the darkness within you that comprehends not the light. I cannot comprehend love or the light. And so when you're just living a life for yourself, that self-cherishing is the source of all your unhappiness. You people who are depressed and unhappy, you're too full of yourself. Get over it. Self-concern is the root of all unhappiness and discontent. Self-concern is what creates the narrative of the unhappy self. Unhappy people have a whole narration of why they're unhappy and who has caused them to be unhappy and how helpless and victimized they are in that situation. That's the pity pot, poor little me, ego, false self. It's the one that has the dreams of abandonment and rejection and loneliness and alienation and estrangement from life, from source, from people. So it's the dream of survival, the dog eat dog. I got to get mine before somebody else does. That whole mentality. You have to die to that. Since who and what you are is whole and perfect forever, any self you are concerned about has to be false. The ego doesn't believe in God. It doesn't believe in you. The ego is blind and deaf to reality and true life. And unhappy people are self-focused and self-seeking and self-serving and thus selfish. And by their very presence, they make others unhappy too. Because their lives are lived alternating between desiring and fearing and defending against. It's the whole conspiratorial type of mentality. Where you're looking always for an evildoer, an antichrist, a boogeyman, an evil whatever, and your whole life becomes about that. So self-concern is the prison of the ego. That ego mind that would hold you captive and confined to littleness. Self-concern, self-preoccupation, self-pity, self-defense. All our past momentums and part of that dream prison. So every form of unhappiness has selfishness as its core. It is a selfishness that isolates and blinds one from truly seeing anyone or anything clearly. So self-concern is hell. It is the ego's nightmare. And happily, it is only a dream, and all dreams end with awakening. And the awakening starts the moment you begin to question the unhappy self and its story. The very questioning, its validity, starts to dissolve its false facade. The facade that you have been loyal to sustaining, which is of the false self, that's all. And as you begin to investigate this false self and its narrative, you begin to see it's never quietly at peace and therefore never content. and it's impossible to please. Now, one of the reasons why many are not awakening is because the very, very first thing that has to happen is the heart has to open. And you cannot open your heart when you're busy attacking. The Course in Miracles states there is no distinction between within and without. What we see without is simply a projection of what we have stored in our movie projecting mind. You cannot experience God's presence while attacking another. To attack and judge another is to bar your own self-realization. That's what Sai Baba told us. So everyone in our life serves as a guide. How we view that person is what they will be to us. We assign the role that they play back to us. They can be our guide to freedom or greater darkness. It is how we take them to be, how we cast that person in our life script that determines the role they play. We choose, we decide. A Course in Miracles states that depending on how we see another, we will either find our way or lose our way. If we see another as anything less than divine and innocent, or less than we'd want to see ourselves, then we've judged. Then, and in that, we lose our way in ego's darkness. We literally blind ourselves when we project vengeance, negativity, criticism, judgment on another. We blind ourselves. And we make ourselves deaf because you absolutely cannot hear the voice of God within your mind when you're in attack mode, when you're judging, criticizing, critiquing. Sai Baba said that the worst sin that we can commit is to talk ill of another. Within the mystery schools, one of the biggest lessons that we are taught is harmlessness. And while many of us are harmless in terms of maybe being vegetarians or not killing the ants or the bugs that come in our house, we have minds like poisonous vipers. We're constantly projecting attack thoughts. And an attack thought is any time we see someone less than divine. Any time. Even, you know, sometimes we think worrying about a person is beneficial. No, worrying about a person is another subtle form of attack. You doubt that they are completely protected, that whatever is going on in their life is absolutely perfect. Not by your judgment, certainly. Because you want everything the way you want it. Not the way God is in that moment, in that expression. See, God alone is all that is. There are no others. You don't exist apart from God. There is nothing in you that needs correcting or fixing or any of that. It just needs to be released, surrendered, let go of. The attachment to having to define everything. Look at something without really seeing it because you're so busy putting descriptives around it so that you never ever see anything. You just see your past descriptives projected again and again on people and things. So you know when you are clear and clean, and when the mind has been corrected by the Holy Spirit, because you will see only the loving and the loveliness of God. You will see only the light within a person. You'll see only the goodness and grace of your supreme beloved. You will have a kindliness and a friendliness and an openness to all people. Your heart will be open to everyone. And it's only when you are completely vulnerable, completely open-hearted, that you're completely safe. No one can touch one. It doesn't have some iota of attack lurking. You have to have a little bit of darkness in the mind in order for that attack. And you but attack yourself, you see. Whenever you attack another, you attack yourself. Whoever you see, you but see yourself. Whatever faults you perceive are the faults within you. Whatever you deprive and deny another of, you have deprived and denied yourself. Whoever you speak to, you but speak to yourself. Whatever, whoever, however you see another, you but see yourself. Now, lest that depress you, nothing that you see or speak or think apart from the truth that you share in the mind of God is real, and none of it has a lasting impression. Guilt is the single most illusion that binds you to reincarnation. Guilt. Feeling unworthy are the two biggest lies that trap you. And they're totally identifying with the false self. And yet the good news, according to the Course of Miracles, is that they don't even register. God can only see the perfection of itself. God can only see the world God created. And since this world is not the will of God, it's not real. That's a quote from Jesus in the Course in Miracles. Where else can you find joy in a joyless place except to realize it's not real? Okay, how does that differ from the guy who withdrew from life? It differs in this. When you allow the Holy Spirit to reveal you to you, He reveals the Son of the Living God, the oneness of the Living God. And that is immortal truth. The ego, on the other hand, brings the sad, sorry, you know, self. How would you say it? Self-sabotaging, self-hating, self-judging thoughts to your mind that make you feel guilty and less than, and that it's impossible for you to ever achieve lasting happiness and love. And no, if you keep following the ego, you won't. Well, you will ultimately, but you may be here for an awful long time. So what to do? You simply have to put yourself fully and completely with no trace of ego in the hands of Almighty God, or Sai Baba, or Jesus Christ, or Buddha, or whomever you feel is your ultimate guide to truth. You have to put yourself fully and completely in the hands of the Divine Spirit and accept whatever comes to you as the gift, the prasad, the blessing, the baraka of God. No complaining. you are experiencing the fruits of your own actions. Sai Baba says, I neither cause joy nor sorrow. You are the designer of both those chains that bind you. I am the witness. Your suffering is due to the evil done in previous births. The evil done in previous births. Every seed we've sown must return to its sower. And the sower will reap the harvest of that seed according to its quality. Simple karmic action, reaction. Is there no out? Yes, you can surrender to the Lord. Give over your life in absolute trust to the only one that knows you, the only one that knows your destiny, and the only one that will do all things for you if you ask and you completely trust. You've got to give it over. Let go. You're lost. You have no clue who you are, where you're going, what your life's about. You're like a blind person just staggering around in a drunken state. Spiritually blind, not physically blind. Some people who are physically blind see a lot better than the people who are sighted. I'm not talking about that. Talking about spiritual blindness. You can always ask the Lord to open your eyes, open your heart, give you greater devotion. A lot of our problems would be solved if we simply lived a life that was devoted to following the Lord. So that you become like a little child. You don't make decisions without consulting the Lord within your heart. Is this your will, Father? And in truth, there is only one will. There is no other will. And that's why every unhappy thing that we see and experience is not the will of God, and therefore it's not real. Therefore it does not exist. The eyes, the physical eyes, would tell us, yes, this is real. But then you think when you're in a dream, it's real too. So that's why we have to trust the words and the writings of the great enlightened men and women, those who have gone before and established themselves in divine awareness or have remembered themselves more accurately. Into their divine perfection that forever is more accurate. We have to take their word as our directive in life. So, depending on how we see another, we will either find our way or lose our way, because it's two by two that we enter the ark of heaven. We are literally walking each other home. And home is not off the planet somewhere. Home is where your heart is. It's where love is present. That's your home. That's what you're seeking. And when you find that, you don't care where you are, because everywhere you are is the heart of God. And everywhere you are is home. Because you're home in the self that forever is. So however we choose to look, if we would see clearly, we need to look past the outer form to see the innate divinity and innocence in everyone and everything. As John Roger has taught us, the secret to soul transcendence is to look for the good and the divine in all people and things, and leave the rest to God. You have to train that mind. You have to train it like a dog to obey the master. To obey the master. To align and identify with the divine. So we are a life within a greater life. We are a light within a greater light. We are love within a greater love. We are will within a greater will. We are the means through which light and love and will and power of the supreme it of itself and how it enters and expresses in time-space. And so we're all in school. And there are three halls that govern our unfoldment. Most people are in the hall of ignorance, driven by ambition, desires, the past, things they've set in motion, their karma. And they're here to experience, because only through being ambitious and getting involved in experiencing life are they going to learn. So that's the hall of ignorance. People identified with their body, their personality, their mind, their emotions, their karma dramas. The second is the hall of learning. Over the door of that hall at Mystery School is the sign, Know Thyself. And this is driven and inspired by the light of seeking, of aspiration. That's when people are beginning to aspire to something greater. They're beginning to connect with that higher self, with that soul. And they move from being an aspirant to a disciple, one who is committed to the discipline of some spiritual path. And then there's the hall of wisdom, and over that doorway is the sign, To thine own self be true. And that is the path of gradual letting go, purification, surrender, becoming a hollow reed, a hollow flute that the divine breath can breathe through. And that is, the hall of wisdom is what produces the initiates. It's the school of the initiates. And then from those three schools or halls, the hall of ignorance, the hall of learning, the hall of wisdom, eventually we come to the veil of bliss. I am that I am. And that's the level of the adept. So we go from aspirant to disciple to initiate to adept. And the three lives, or lights, I should say, that govern these different expressions. The hall of ignorance is governed by the light of experience. The hall of learning is governed by the light of seeking. The hall of wisdom is governed by the light of being. And then we move into the veil of bliss and we begin to operate consciously in the Ananda Kosha, the sheath of bliss. We begin to manifest that natural Sahaja Yoga, Sahaja Samadhi. And being in the unified oneness of the One Self, in which we live and move and have our being in and as God, we lovingly serve. We become an outpouring of self-giving. We become the bestower of the darshan, of the baraka, of the divine essence. Until whoever sees us sees not us, but the Father who sent us. And that is the divine life that we are here to live. And we start by getting involved in the life as it presents right now in our daily living. Start the day with love. Fill the day with love. Spend the day with love. End the way and day with love. That is the way to God. Love is the fulfilling of all the laws, all the prophets, all the commandments, until you awaken as the living love itself. So I hope this has been helpful. I realize some of you did not have a live stream tonight, so do not worry. We will re-air this show for those of you that may not have been able to access the website tonight. So let's go out chanting NIHU. And as we do, let's raise our hands and send the blessing of love and light and joy and peace to all sentient beings throughout all of the vastness of eternal life that we forever share with God. Deep breath. Anihu. Blessings and grace to each one of you. Namaste.